Everybody, we got another commission podcast. This is the last of the football champs from the Bald Move Final Fantasy.
Final
Fantasy Football League. These are the winners of the 2017 contest. Today's winner is Hatorian, who's also the league commissioner, which that seems shady as all shit. And he's also... Yeah. In his comments, he says, all I have to say is, two-time champ in 3 years, bitches.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
I feel like he should have to recuse himself from the fantasy league.
Not even trying to hide the skullduggery going on.
You know, you got to cheat to win, then you cheat, and I guess you win.
And then you win.
A commission.
So, he chose the 2013 movie Prisoners. Directed by Denis Villeneuve, who I've been pronouncing Denis Villeneuve incorrectly for lo these many years. It stars a bunch of people that you've heard of. Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, Viola Davis, Maria Bello, Terrence Howard, among others.
Paul Dano.
Huh?
Paul Dano, who I've seen
Paul
in
Dano,
stuff.
Yeah. Paul Dano, who we really enjoyed in the movie, the one, the Baldies, it's called There Will Be Blood. There you go.
Yes, he was the preacher guy.
Because I don't want to give much feedback because I don't want to ruin anything. My understanding is neither of you have seen it, so I don't want to give anything away. I trust you guys will know what to do. Thank you for your trust in us. What did you think of this movie? Have you seen this movie before?
No, I'd never seen this movie. And I actually thought going into it, I was a little worried because I thought this was like some foreign film with subtitles that I was going to have to really be in the mood for. And I was pleasantly surprised to see when I looked it up, this is like a movie that I could probably sit back and get immersed in the traditional way that I watch movies.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I actually ended up liking this movie quite a bit.
All right. I guess I admire the movie, but unfortunately, this is the blending of two of my least favorite genres, the true crime genre and the torture porn genre. And it just bums me
out.
Like, this kind of movie...
It's meant to bum you out.
Yeah, but what So how can I say I would enjoy it?
Right.
I also found that I had... I felt like I also solved the central thesis or the central mystery of it. I didn't know all the ins and outs.
Yeah, but we're definitely gonna spoil the crap out of this. So
yeah, and this movie largely relies on twists and turns,
right?
And you know, I think there's some interesting conversations we'll have on the ethics behind the actions undertaken by these characters, but. I mean, I found that it kind of bummed me out. And I don't feel like I don't need these kind of movies to bum me out. This week alone in Cincinnati, a toddler died on the front porch because they froze to death because their mom was inside probably getting high. Another lady in Newport, Kentucky chopped her head off of a 3-year-old toddler. The world's full of real terrible shit.
Sure.
Don't need to watch 2.5 hours of it.
Okay.
So thanks for that, Hattori.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually like thrillers quite a bit, especially if they're well put together and have other things to do besides just reveal the plot. And I think this movie, while not being the best put together thriller I've ever seen, certainly had a lot of, I guess, interesting things to say and also kept me engrossed the entire time. Like, the acting is really solid all the way across the board.
Yes.
I never felt like... they were rushing through this thing. They were just taking the time and letting the story kind of unfold naturally. And I feel like while it didn't service the thriller nature of it quite enough, it did everything else right.
Yeah.
And I was like you. I solved the big chunk of the mystery with maybe some minor details missing.
Yeah, I almost feel like
near the middle of the movie or earlier.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. I want to get a couple more minutes into it before we talk about that. But I will mention that my wife really liked this movie. She hasn't had my problems with torture porn, and she's all about true crime. She fucking loves true crime. So I don't deny that people can derive pleasure from watching this movie. I just not one of those ones.
Sure.
I did really like the acting. I also really admired the fact that to serve, I think, the ethical meditation that Denis wanted to do, none of these characters are perfect.
Yeah.
They're a lot of times understandable, but then they also do a lot of things that is are frustrating and stupid. Mm-hmm. And I found I keenly feel those frustrations when I watch this movie. It's kind of like how I used to feel about like slasher flicks before I realized that, oh, you're not supposed to root for the people being slashed.
Yeah.
You're supposed to root for Freddy and Jason to dice people up real good. Like,
right.
But this is like, they're not stupid teenagers. They're blinded by grief or preconceptions or their role in society that they don't understand the part that they play in their little tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Jake Gyllenhaal as an actor?
I do. I think he's one of the strongest performances in this movie.
I've seen him in this and Brokeback Mountain and a couple others where like
Donnie Darko,
where like his puppy dog eyes really are hard for me to take serious. And this is one of the first films that I actually 15, 20 minutes into the film, I took him seriously. Because I'm looking at this guy, and he's got all these tattoos, but he's got these ginormous little boy puppy dog eyes. And I wish I knew more about what made this guy tick. Because he's largely a cipher.
You mean the character? Or
yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal himself?
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal. Because I was fascinated by... Like I wish I saw more of how he lived and how he... Because I don't understand him. Like, they much more efficiently painted a picture of Hugh Jackman as a person who doesn't rely on anyone but himself.
Mm-hmm.
So why he would go rogue in the middle of a police investigation and do these just what seems like insane things is much more understandable. I wasn't as sure about Jake Gyllenhaal's character and what makes him tick and why he does the things he does.
Yeah, and I don't know... that there's really anything there to latch onto to figure that out.
Right.
They don't show you anything.
Right.
Of his life outside of the investigation, except for a single restaurant, like Chinese restaurant scene.
Mm-hmm.
On is it Thanksgiving?
I'm not sure.
I think it was on a holiday. I think it was Thanksgiving. But yeah, you don't know much about him at all.
The only thing we know is that he has never not solved a crime.
Right. He's got a perfect streak and
streak unbroken.
Right, and we'll talk about it more when we get to the spoilers, but so he saved the two girls, but yeah. More importantly, streak unbroken.
Right. How long does this movie take place over?
It's a week.
Okay, I wasn't sure if they established that, because it felt like when I was in the back half of this movie, I'm like, my God, but then I realized that like, oh, I've been assuming that time has elapsed between certain scenes where it's like, this is pretty much it's a 2.5 hour real time depiction of 7 days, I guess.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Do we want to talk?
Have you seen Nightcrawler?
No, I have not.
Man.
Yeah.
So that's a Jake Gyllenhaal movie where he's on the other side of this. And he's like an investigative, or not an investigative journalist. He's a guy
crime
who
scene
prowls,
photographer,
prowls
right?
the streets, going to like get shots of crimes, and eventually like it sort of he ends up producing the crimes in order to get the shots.
Right.
He's very much like a Peter Parker kind of guy, right?
Right.
Except the other side of it, the crime part.
Yeah.
That is a really, really good performance from Jake Gyllenhaal.
Do you think I would like it?
Like,
based on what I've just said about my, because it seems a little true crimey, thrillery to me.
It is, but I think there's more there.
Okay.
And the performance from Jake Gyllenhaal alone is worth seeing it for.
Okay.
He's very disturbed and upsetting in that movie.
Right. Right.
And then stuff like Source Code and. I saw that, and I saw Zodiac. He's good in that as well.
Yeah. I've not seen either of those films. Do you want to talk about, I don't know where to go. Do you want to talk about how we figured out? From here on out, spoilers. Again, this is a very plot-dependent movie. I don't think I'll ever see this movie again. I don't see there's, the performances are really good, but you have to, for me, go through a lot of stuff that's not pleasant to get to those good performances. And there's other movies that kind of hit that thing. But, I feel like it's a bit of a flaw that they introduced the Catholic priest who murdered what we find out to be the husband of the maze killer.
Right.
I feel like that because I noticed the guy's necklace. I'm like, that looks like the Legendary Films logo. And then it kept coming up, and it was so obvious in connection to this other woman. And then, like, 30 minutes into film, we know the existence of this moldering corpse in the priest's basement. Mm-hmm. We know that this woman who's got this weird family relationship, her husband's mysteriously ran away in exactly the same time frame. Yep. To me, I didn't know exactly what was going on. I wasn't sure if she was like, but even halfway through the film, I felt like I understood that she was also sinister. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was just a little bit, and maybe you're supposed to feel that way, tedious, that I'm just waiting for the heroes to figure it out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think some of the movie is intentionally tedious in that regard.
Or like, I shouldn't say tedious, I should say frustrating.
Okay, yeah, that's maybe a better word for it. But I agree. I definitely got the broad swaths of the mystery solved way earlier than I felt like I should have watching a thriller.
Right.
But it did kind of feel like the movie wanted us to more engage less with the mystery and more engage with the people involved in solving it. Like Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman.
Right.
They wanted us to kind of weigh their actions against the things we knew, which we kind of knew more than them at any given point, you know?
Right, right. I mean, it reminds me, this is kind of a meditation on, like, I talk about this quite a bit, like I don't know, some kind of management philosophy book. I was introduced to this four quadrant of processes and outcomes that you can have. A bad process leading to a bad outcome, which is what we call failure.
Seems like the Hugh Jackman quadrant in this episode.
You can have a bad process that leads to a good outcome, which is perhaps the most dangerous quadrant to be in, because you can be saddled with a process that actively is inhibiting your success. But since you are succeeding despite that, you start to associate the bad process and the flawed process with the successes, and that'll eventually you'll run out of rope and hang yourself. Then there is a good processes with a bad outcome, which you'd call like a noble failure, and then but then you're on the right track, but you might not know it, and you might start second guessing yourself because you're using bad processes. And then you've got good processes with a good result, which is, you know, what everyone hopes for. And I felt like a lot of this movie is essentially bad process with good outcomes, because Hugh Jackman was on to something about the fact that this kid was connected to the murder and he knew where the bodies were lying. But
I'm actually not certain of that.
Really?
No, I'm not sure that he had anything to do with the actual, like, the kidnapping part of the kidnapping, or I guess the torture part of the kidnapping.
I mean,
I know he picked them up.
Yes.
But, it seems but I'm
like
not
that's
sure.
His role, like, that he was the one to pick up the children, and then especially after her husband died, who was the real leader of the weird satanic cult thing they had going on, she relied on him kind of, like, being non-threatening and childlike to attract these children and lure them into the RV, and then I think she drove off with them. Because they manifestly demonstrated that this man cannot drive.
Yeah.
In one of the earlier scenes.
But I'm not sure how much he knows about what's happening to these children. You know, I mean, they never tell us.
Well, he knew that his mom was... Well, he knew that his abductor kept them on. Yeah, no, I think he knew the whole time where their kids were at. And it's kind of baffling why he didn't, except for, I guess, you've got a child with... cognitive impairment because of a lifetime of torture and experiencing all that trauma again and like repressing. And I don't know, like that's such an abnormal psychology that I don't even know how to relate to.
Sure.
But I felt like that. Yeah. Like Hugh Jackman was on to the right thing for all the wrong reasons. And that I don't know what quadrant you'd put Jake Gyllenhaal in. Because he did some mistakes, too. Like, I felt
he's
like...
He's the good process leading to the good outcome.
Yeah, but I
he
felt like...
He saves everyone, and he did it the right way without harming anyone else.
Right, but there's a scene early on where, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal's trying to explain to Hugh Jackman why he's having to let this kid go.
Yeah.
And Hugh Jackman was very angry and wroth at the seeming injustice, and I felt like that Jake Gyllenhaal's character did nothing to... address the quite reasonable and emotional concerns of this father, which fed into the father's, you know, independent kind of paranoia that the cops are going to take this seriously or not going to be able to solve it and lead him. You know, like in that first scene where Hugh Jackman's like, how can you let him go? Why don't you hold him on some pre... And Jake Gyllenhaal's literally like, whoa, buddy, look, I want to find your daughter just as... And he's saying a bunch of shit that Hugh Jackman knows isn't true and not trying to bother saying like... Here is the legal realities, and here is how we solved the case, and here are some other theories I'm working on. It was just that he didn't want to engage with Hugh Jackman's civilian bullshit at all, and I felt like if he had really empathized with that fight with Hugh Jackman and made an ally, maybe some of this stuff would have been, you know, maybe Hugh Jackman wouldn't have felt like he had to take matters in his own hands.
I didn't read it like that at all.
Huh.
I read it like... this is someone trying to do their job. It's their job, so they're obviously not going to be quite as invested as the father.
Right.
But he was... Nothing he would have said to Hugh Jackman would have calmed him down. Absolutely nothing.
That might be true.
It doesn't matter how much he says, I understand. Like, I know you love your daughter. We're going to find her. Like, none of that shit would have mattered. Like, we're going to throw the book at this fucker. We're going to eat him for lunch.
Yeah.
None of that would have stopped Hugh Jackman from going rogue and doing what he was going to do if Jake Gyllenhaal worked within the rules of the law, which he was doing.
Right. But then what's interesting is, like, this is why I think the exploration of the quadrants is a neat way to see the through this film, is an interesting magnifying glass to examine it, is that, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal, when he gets the crazy Joker acolyte from The Dark Knight, in his clutches, he goes extra judicial and has the guy blow his head off, which I thought...
Sure.
That's the other thing that I thought found jarring is how he was not immediately taken off the case.
Mm-hmm.
Like why the chief didn't be like, look, man, you are, for whatever reason, way too fucking ate up in this case, and you need to, like, you probably need to go on vacation. Like, we have you on camera beating a suspect, then grabbing your gun and killing you. Like, you're on vacation, pending review.
Sure. That was a huge mistake on his part.
Right. And it's like one of those things where I'm not sure that needed to be in the film, except for...
Well, I don't know. I mean, it shows this quote-unquote dispassionate guy who, at the outset, is not nearly as invested as Hugh Jackman, right?
Right.
It shows him kind of bleeding over to the Hugh Jackman side at some point. Like,
sure,
getting too invested might be an actual bad thing here.
Yeah, no, it's understandable. And that's why, like, a lot of times I do rail against police brutality and, like, them going extra legal. But I also understand it as a friend, as a guy who has a friend that is a cop. You see a lot of bad shit,
yeah,
and it's almost impossible to completely not take those interactions with the worst of society into your everyday reaction to civilians.
Your view of them, yeah.
When you become aware of what average people are capable of, then average people start becoming dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's an excuse to not do better and to you know, not be critical of cops that step over the line. But again, it is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hugh Jackman abducting this kid and torturing him. It's super understandable, but on the, not only is it ethically and morally wrong, it's also just, it's bad police work.
Sure.
To torture an insane person for any little information you can get out of them. I mean,
yeah. And I think that's one of the things that the movie is trying to say, that the dispassionate approach might actually be the better way to solve the crimes here.
Right.
Because it leads you down roads that, you know, you might not get to it as quickly, but you're more likely to find the solution in a weird way.
Right.
Right. Because it was Jake Gyllenhaal's actions in that interrogation room that almost broke the, like, made the case unsolvable.
Right.
Right. If it weren't for just a couple of, like, coincidences and stuff,
mm-hmm,
he wouldn't have found it after then. Whereas before that, he had a witness, a potential accomplice to interrogate.
And I think that Villeneuve was trying to intentionally engineer situations where the audience would have a loyalty in a particular moment that didn't make you feel kind of bad about yourself. For example, when Jake Gyllenhaal confronts Hugh Jackman in his father's abandoned apartment complex where he's been torturing, you know, Paul Dano all this time,
mm-hmm,
I was feeling tense, like, oh God, what if Jake Gyllenhaal finds him? But then, but you know, when everything plays out, it's like that would have been probably a good outcome. That's the other thing. It's like, it seems like at the end of this movie, it's just a bummer because these girls are fucking traumatized. Like, sure. They're like, maybe they'll have a shot at a normal life after years and years of therapy, but they're going to be, their life course is unalterably altered.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I said, I don't know, maybe that's
irreversibly altered.
Irreversibly altered. It's definitely going to take a different course than it was going to take. Hugh Jackman probably goes to jail.
Yep. I would say definitely goes to jail.
This kid who is not, is he even a real person at this point after he's been tortured and dehumanized for so long? Like, he's probably going to be institutionalized for the rest of his life and should be.
Yeah.
There are no real heroes. Like, there's lots of villains and there's lots of, like, just amorphous evil, but there's not a lot of good to cling to. Like, yeah. I guess it's an absolute positive that this woman, this disturbed woman, was put into the grave a few years earlier than she probably would have been.
Yep.
That's it.
A positive that the girl survived.
It's positive that the girl survived.
I kind of, like, even though he has his moments of problematic behavior, we'll call it, I think Jake Gyllenhaal is a positive force in this movie overall.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't really view Hugh Jackman in the same way.
Right.
I view Hugh Jackman as a negative force.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't help to solve the case at all. There's nothing he does, as far as I can tell, that leads into the investigation in a way that solves it, right?
I don't know that's true because
him IDing the sock. How about that?
Right. And him,
that's like the one thing, which he could have done anyway once, like without torturing Paul Dano.
Yeah.
Because he gets nothing out of Paul Dano. Nothing.
He gets the fact that, yeah, you're right. Then finding the girl is what and Hugh Jackman. But if Hugh Jackman had not pursued things that far, he would have never gone over to have a conversation with a lady, and the little girl would never have said, you were there, and he would have made the connection. And then Jake, you know, it's like one of those things where he didn't not help save the case. And if he didn't take these the more extreme wrongheaded actions, some of the smaller things that broke the case open at the end, it wouldn't have happened.
But
either.
In my mind, it was all the maze that tied it together. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal solved this case by
seeing the medallion,
following up on the 9 sexual predators or whatever, the sex offenders who were in the neighborhood, finding the guy in the basement, seeing the pictures of the maze, going to her house and seeing the picture of her husband with the medal or the medallion. That was what solved the case in my mind.
Does a priest go to jail?
Oof. Probably.
I just don't know what a jury says, because it's like, it's one of those things, like, there's also meditation on vigilantism.
Yeah.
Like, that priest took matters in his own hands. That guy, what if that guy had been, like, the Joker acolyte and was just a, what did they call that? A fantasizer, or someone who's, like, ritually pretending to be a serial killer as a way to either deal with their own trauma just to generate attention. Like, what if that guy was that? And he just killed a mentally disturbing person when there's no, 16 murders for Satan.
Sure, that could.
But on the other hand, I think a jury of 12 people are going to, like, this Catholic priest murdered this guy who actually did murder children, and...
Yeah. You could also say the same of Hugh Jackman's character as well.
Yeah, because that's a harder case.
It's much harder.
Because, like, you know, he, like, what little sanity... I mean, that's the other thing, is, like...
Because the kid himself was a victim, right? Like, I know he was victimizing other people, but he was also a victim.
Right.
So to be further victimized by Hugh Jackman...
Right, like, no, there's no way he would not be, institutionalized other than... Like, he would be found insane.
Right.
And not responsible for his actions, I think, legally. So
Hugh Jackman torturing him would probably look pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like, what does it do to Hugh Jackman? Because, like, at the end of the day, you've got a grieving father who's bad enough, but now you've got, like, I don't think you can dehumanize a person. Like, that's one of the arguments against torture. It's not only does it, broadly speaking, not work and not be a way to effectively interrogate people, but it also has to do psychological damage to the person torturing.
Sure, I would think so.
You know, like there's no way you can you have to, like, you can keep your humanity, sanity, Or I don't know, something else. Pick two of those things you can keep when you're a torturer. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can do. I don't know how you cannot. Like, how is he going to be? How's he going to be a father and a husband? And like, look at Maria. Is it Maria Bello? Her character. Like, I don't know. But there's also some interesting things about what it says about like ideals of masculinity. Like Hugh Jackman embodying this mantle of the family protector, something that's really impossible. Like, no person can protect everyone from everything at all, like any one time.
Right, and the film demonstrates that, right? He's got these racks and racks of food and supplies and ammunition, and none of it helped him.
Exactly.
None of it.
And in fact, a lot of his shit was maladaptive because, you know, he's trying to keep his wife in some kind of fantasy land where her daughter might still be alive while she's downing barbiturates and essentially staying in a drug-induced haze. Like, none of that shit is very good. When his son tried to call him on it, he snaps and gets violent with him. Like, to me, this is, you know, like Hugh Jackman's character, while I think a lot of audiences would see it as like, you know, noble or well-intentioned, like he's got a garbage life philosophy that has utterly failed him. And he doubles down on, well, this is the way, you know, that like you know, and essentially vigilantism. He's the dark side of Batman.
Right.
Like, if Batman was not the world's greatest detective and not magically always right about all of his crime victims, you would have Hugh Jackman.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like when I was watching this movie, I couldn't help but think of like Taken, right? Because it's a very similar premise, like the kid is kidnapped and
right.
Liam Neeson goes after him, but you have, I guess, more information in those movies.
Yeah.
And so you root for the guy who's out there doing vigilante justice.
Because he unfailingly is right in every connection he makes. He never, like...
Which this becomes very gray, this movie.
Right.
Because he is right, but he's not making any progress. And B, he's also torturing a kid who was tortured.
Yeah.
Like... Whereas, none of it feels good.
Whereas you think, like, what if Jake Gyllenhaal is able to get this guy in a room with, like, a warm blanket and a cup of hot cocoa and just, like, really sympathize? But the thing is, Jake Gyllenhaal has no context in which to view the old lady as sinister.
Sure.
That, like, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, the police and Hugh Jackman are operating in a vacuum of facts. Like, they don't, like, they're trying to figure it out. They don't have it. And Hugh Jackman just is like, well, shit, I'm just going to, I know this guy's guilty. I know this guy knows where these kids are. And he's right.
He knows, quote unquote, knows, you know?
And that's the thing. He turns out to be right. Cause I do believe, like I said, this Paul Dano character knew where those kids were. I don't know why he didn't say, because again, his way of thinking and psychology is completely alien to me, but you know, Hugh Jackman is right, but for the wrong reasons and with the ultimately terrible and amoral approach.
Yeah.
But you know, what do you do? Like, the other flip side of this is like, I kept thinking the O.J. Simpson trial. Like the father of and sister of Nicole Brown Simpson, how they put their complete faith in the police system and the justice system and were fucking robbed. And now what do you do? Like, it's, you know, it's you can't do anything. Like, this is just like it's a miscarriage of justice that happened because you put full faith in the system and thought you were going to get an outcome that you like. That's good process, bad outcome, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I
guess you go rogue at that point.
Yeah. I don't know. You just wait for OJ to fucking do armed robbery on memorabilia. And,
right.
You know, and even that doesn't keep him in prison for the rest of his life. So
I think there's an even deeper layer in this movie of ethics surrounding Terrence Howard and his wife.
Yes.
Because they're sort of collaborators, but also sort of bystanders. They're in a really weird, tough position in this movie where they are also grieving for their daughter. Mm-hmm. Hugh Jackman has gone out and done this terrible thing in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they still want him to sort of pursue it. And they even aid him in pursuing it because of how badly they want their daughter back.
And they understand. And also they're acting in a perfect information, because when Paul Dano tries to escape, Like, no one would fault any of their daughters for doing that, like grabbing a piece of glass and as soon as they get it, like stabbing, trying to get it out the window. And yet that's proof of his this guy's treachery and villainy in their mind. Like the fact that he is a prisoner and being tortured and, you know, good, bad or indifferent. Like it's an understandably human reaction to want to get the hell away from that.
Sure.
But that was just proof of like, well, you know, Hugh Jackman might be onto something here, honey. I don't know.
It's tough because, you know, they, I feel like especially the wife who the actress's name is Zoe Sol. I know I've seen her in stuff, but I didn't know her name until now.
Are you talking about the psychotic, the Satan worshiper?
No, no, no. Terrence Howard's wife in the movie.
I thought that was Viola Davis.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. That was the daughter, Zoe Sol.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Viola Davis. She is in the even tougher position because she is brought into this after it's already happened, and she has to decide what to do. Does she shut down this potential lead because what's happening is very, very wrong, or does she allow them to continue with it? You know, and it's complicated even further when Terrence Howard changes his mind somewhere through it, and she decides to talk him out of letting Paul Dano go.
Right.
All of those people's actions are understandable, even if they're reprehensible, you know?
Right.
And ethically, where I come down on it is certainly all of those people were wrong.
Right.
They should not have done the things that they were doing.
Yeah, I want to talk about this more, this Hugh Jackman self-reliance, and I'm going to call it like hyper-vigilance. The fact that you are total, like you can't rely on anybody but yourself. It is, as Americans, I feel like it's very easy to see the flip side of that behavior as being insane, where you just don't plan and you just count on the kindness of strangers and you take advantage of people's generosity and you're a leech, you're a freeloader, and those things are seen, they're vilified. But the opposite of crazy is crazy. I don't feel like people see that side of Hugh Jackman, that the doomsday prepper, the everything is out to get you, that you can only trust in your wits and your mitts, as insane as it really is. Because some points in your life, you're going to have to lean, unless you literally go off and live in the middle of the fucking Gobi Desert or in the middle of, you are going to have to rely on a community, whether that is your neighbor, whether that is your town, whether that is like the like an entire nation of support. You're going to have to do it. And to pretend otherwise is literally insane. Yet we, I think in American culture, we kind of glorify that. Like, it's very rare to see these explorations of where that behavior turns to psychopathy.
No, I think it's that frontiersman kind of mentality, you know?
Right.
Like, you come over to America and you're heading west, you pretty much just have your wits and, and your guns, right?
And there's like still pockets of America where that is more true than not. Like, there's places in America where you call the police and maybe they'll be there in 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. But residually, I mean, that's embedded in our culture.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah. Whereas
Europe has had, Europe, Asia, Africa, they've had thousands of years to get over that shit, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's like, there hasn't been a frontier over there where someone could go wild and rogue and do whatever they want in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, it's, we no one has a problem of identifying leechers and mooches and pillorying them, and rightfully so, because that's crazy as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I, as a person who considers myself hypervigilant and who's kind of working on that because I was forced to confront how crazy it was a while back, it's kind of difficult to watch a guy like Hugh Jackman go through this because it's like, you know, like there's ultimately, I mean, what do? Not go outside because you might get struck by lightning? Mm-hmm. Like some of these things where you're trying to prevent like child abductions and stuff, or like everyone's afraid of them, but they're so shockingly rare.
Yeah.
That there are, like, you know, there are parents that essentially have done that to their children. Like, they can't ever go outside or they can't ever interact with the world because lightning might strike them. They might get abducted. They might get savaged by a stranger. I don't know. I think that's an interesting thing to ponder.
No, there's a certain level of preparedness that I admire, you know?
Like, yes.
You might be without power for a couple weeks. That could happen.
Right.
You might want to grab, you know, a case of water, enough canned goods for a week or two.
Right.
do you need stockpiles of ammunition and food for months to years?
Right.
Do you need to be digging your underground shelters, like that kind of stuff? Probably not.
Right. Right. The odds that that is actually going to, I mean, that's, I don't know, the odds that that's, but it's seen, I guess it's seen as harmless because, like, you know, was it hurting
Suppose
anyone?
So.
But I don't know, like, that worldview is harmful because it does, a fundamentally, you know, because you, like, when you hold that worldview, there's nothing that disproves it until it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing that's like, well, I'm self-reliant. I don't need anybody. No one should need anybody, blah, blah, blah. But then the second you need somebody or the second you need something, it's there, whether you wanted it or valued it or not. You know, like if you live in America and you lose your job, you've got unemployment, whether you want to collect it or not. You know, if you get found dying by the side of the road, regardless of whether you have insurance or not, you're going to be carted off to the hospital and doctors are going to try to save your life without knowing whether you're going to pay. It's like it doesn't matter. It's and that's the, I guess the frustrating thing about that worldview is that there, since there's no place in the world where you can practice it to the nth degree and you don't know the limitations of it until you're actually living through it, it's like one of those things where it's like it's a bullshit philosophy because you're pretending like you're walking a tight wire without a net, but the nets are there. The nets are there. There's no way to fucking opt out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess like the Amish do, like they don't pay Social Security. And if they get sick and die, like their congregation, there's pockets where you can, but like the vast majority of people practice that life philosophy with no ill, with no ill effects because a safety net is there for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's something that I was pondering as I watched the show.
Okay.
What else we want to talk about?
I want to talk about maybe the best directed scene in this movie.
Okay.
Which I thought was the mad rush to the hospital. I thought that was phenomenally directed.
Oh, yeah. The guy desperately trying to get this perhaps ODing girl.
Yeah. She's ODing in the backseat. He's got clearly a long drive. He's been shot, grazed in the head
by a bullet.
And the blood is leaking into his eyes.
And I'm thinking, I'm white knuckled. I'm thinking he is going, like, in his heroic efforts to save this girl, he's going to get her killed.
Get both of them killed, yeah.
Yeah, because he's not wearing a seatbelt. She's not certainly not wearing a seatbelt. Like,
uh-huh.
Jesus Christ, how dark can this... Because this movie's dark.
It is, yeah.
And the virtue of a movie this dark is you don't know that that Denny is going to fairly have a, I guess, a conventional... Like, he's not going to do something like that.
Yeah.
That, like, lightning strikes kind of random.
But I felt like I was in the car with him.
Yeah.
Like, Jake Gyllenhaal is the madman at the wheel.
Oh, when he blew through that, like, final red light, it was like a heart attack.
And he can't see a damn thing. He can barely see the emergency sign as he pulls
right,
in.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastically directed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's such a quiet film with these occasional flashes of action. And Villeneuve is so... good. He's so capable of switching those lanes pretty effortlessly, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you see action movie directors struggle with emotional scenes. You see, you know, directors are adept at character and dialogue struggle with action. It's very rare to see a person who just seems like he can, whatever the story needs to tell, he can fucking tell it.
Yeah. The other thing that I found interesting, I guess, thematically, is this idea of faith versus lack of faith, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of plastered all over. Hugh Jackman is very much a man of faith. We see him praying multiple times throughout the movie when he's faced with either a difficult shot in the beginning of the film or a decision or strength that he needs to continue down the path he's on.
Yeah.
And then we see in the kidnapper someone who used to be a faithful person and is now completely lost their faith and is in fact kidnapping kids in order to shake the faith of others. And in my mind, this movie is trying to say that both of these people can do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
That it is not like faith dependent. It's not lack of faith that drives you to bad things. It's just people being people.
Right.
And that the faith has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. It's like, an extra step because that's as an atheist, I was watching this and being like, I mean, I don't have any faith. Like, I don't have any faith to lose. So, like, I'm immune. Like, to me, that's just an insane person doing, and that happens. That's an unfortunate side
right.
effect of not being able to predict the future, and you know, not having. Like, I don't even know. Like, I don't know what kind of mental health care a nation would have to keep all of this stuff from happening. Like, it almost seems like as your price of admission to being a human, that you are going to be able to experience some of the best and some of the most moving things. And you're also going to have to look at the blackest heart of darknesses on occasion.
Yeah.
Obviously I think that societies can do better to help people, but like, I don't know, but it's so weird to see as a neutral, uninterested observer about the battle of faith, because mm-hmm. you're right. At the end of the day, like, faith or no, people are going to be terrible and people are going to be crazy and people are going to be criminally insane. People are going to be generous and noble. It's like, it's so weird to see. It's like, the Rick and Morty episode where Rick's got this battery that's powered by a society that he has tricked into thinking they're generating their own electricity, but he's siphoning and that's what runs his car. And Morty's like, well, this is like slavery with extra steps. Like, it's like this is ethics and morality with just an extra layer of an unappealable layer that you've added on to it. But there's like an ultimate evil and an ultimate good, and they're battling over our souls. Like, or the world in our life is the sum total of the choices we make and the contributions we make to society and the things that we take selfishly from society.
Right. And when you strip that subject away from it, it's weird because it's using, I guess, faith and lack thereof in order to demonstrate how none of that matters.
Yeah.
In my opinion, anyway.
What do you think the movie's like? So we talked about like all the different conundrums, ethical, moral. What is the movie's take on like Jake Gyllenhaal going rogue and beating the shit out of that guy and him blowing his head off? What is the movie's take on Hugh Jackman? Because like the movie ends with Hugh Jackman blowing the whistle.
Yeah.
Which I loved. I thought that was a great way to end it.
Okay, I want to talk about that as like from a thriller aspect.
Because there's nothing else good that can come from any further. Like, because what happens next is Hugh Jackman probably gets thrown in cuffs and he goes to the hospital and he's handcuffed to the bed and he's going to stand trial. And but it is a moment of grace in the film. Mm-hmm. Like, you're wanting Hugh Jackman to be found. You don't want him dying in that pit.
Sure.
So what is the movie's opinion on his moral and ethical decisions? What is the movie's opinion on Jake Gyllenhaal's moral and ethical opinions? Or do you think that Denny is very carefully to remain neutral and let whatever you think is...
Well, I think by ending the movie the way he does, he doesn't remain entirely neutral.
I agreed.
He's saying that perhaps Hugh Jackman's actions, though he needs to face the consequences of them, were warranted and helped to save his daughter somehow. And certainly I think that he pins sort of the hero medal on Jake Gyllenhaal. I know he has done some things. He got too personally involved and he nearly blew the entire investigation
He brutalized a victim.
Right.
He
broke
the
rule of law.
Did.
I understand that. Not quite in the same way. But certainly he made a mistake, but I think he recognized his mistake. Mm-hmm. Whereas Hugh Jackman, I don't believe ever recognized it. And yet he is saved at the end. So I think that Denis was probably trying to say that, yes, he's done some bad things, but in the grand scope of it, he was probably in the right, which I don't agree with.
Yeah.
I think that Hugh Jackman is a bad person in this movie. Overall.
I don't know. Like, to me, he's a good person that did bad things.
I don't know that I distinguish the two. Like,
that's fair.
At that level, like, Hugh Jackman has done such bad things that I don't know I can call him a good person anymore. Whereas Jake Gyllenhaal, I think I can at the end of the movie.
It's interesting because I see a lot of people getting hung up on. I think a lot of bad happens in this world because people say, well, I'm basically a good person, so I wouldn't be supporting or doing something evil.
Right.
All the while, they are doing or supporting either tacitly or implicitly something evil.
Yeah.
I think we need to kind of detach someone's feelings about themselves and our feelings about them being like, you know, like we all want to be good people. We all want to be the hero of our story. But yet the reality is we all fuck up. We all hurt people. We all are selfish. We all take advantage from occasion. There's no one that's without sin in that regard. And things just get muddy about like how you emotionally feel about the person Like good people can do bad things. Bad people can do good things.
Sure.
Fucking Hitler had a dog, and he loved him, and he took care of it, and he painted
sweet paintings.
He painted decent paintings, and he probably told some pretty good jokes.
He made the Volkswagen.
Right, right. And then, like, you know, there's, like, history is replete with people that we lionize and see as good, but there's uncomfortable facts, like, oh, he's a slaveholder, or, oh, it turns out he beat his wife, or, oh, it turns out that he was a real shit as a father. I don't know, man. To me, that again, that's more of our morality with extra steps getting in and fucking with it, rather than just dispassionately saying that we all self-contain, like, good and bad things. And I don't know if I want to go so far as, like, anyone could snap and abduct someone and torture them for days to try. It's not that far, but I also think it's super dangerous to think that, like, well, a good person wouldn't do that. Because most people think they're good people. Like, fucking crazy maze woman thought she was a good person, right?
Right. She was trying to set people straight.
Right.
She's in their faith.
Yeah, do whatever the hell she was trying to do. Like, you know, she wasn't the fucking Darth Vader in her story. So, like, I even as I say it, I feel like I can accuse myself as being a pedant, or, like, you know,
sure,
talking about differences that I'm trying to make a meaningful difference when it's not. But I don't know. Fucking language matters, and how we emotionally feel about things matters, and can get in the way of, like, it should be easy to absolutely condemn things that are bad. But our personal feelings about the people doing them and their motivations sometimes get in the way of doing that.
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to talk maybe about this red whistle for a second.
Okay.
Because I feel like this is the biggest mistake. There are, I think, a couple of mistakes this movie makes if it wants to be a thriller, which I'm not sure that that's the entire point of this movie.
Yeah.
But in so much as it is a thriller, I feel like it makes a mistake in revealing that maze stuff, connecting those dots a little too brightly,
yep,
too early on. And also, I don't feel like they should have shown Hugh Jackman finding that whistle.
At the bottom of the pit?
Yeah, I think you don't show him finding the whistle, and then when he blows it, it's much more of a surprise. But it makes perfect sense because the woman has told him, I had your daughter down there.
Right.
Like, both of those kids were in that hole for a long time, and we didn't need to see him finding it. Because we would have realized exactly what was happening at the end without it.
Yeah, I think that if I agree. I think I agree with most of your assessment there, obviously, about the maze stuff, because I had a problem with that myself. But
yeah,
I will push back and say, like, does this change your mind about it? There's already enough uncertainty about whether Hugh Jackman would survive 24 hours. And they carefully established that it's been probably longer than 24 hours since that he's been in that pit.
I think so, yeah.
With the fact that, like, oh, if you get a tourniquet, you might survive 24 hours. Plus, he's taken his heroic dose of juice, knockout juice. I don't think the mystery, to me, the thing at the end is not like, oh, wow, he got the whistle. It's more like he was able to hold on and survive. So, like, the fact that he had the whistle, I feel like, is not the, I guess, the dramatic reveal.
I guess I knew it was coming. Like, from the time that he goes in that hole and finds that whistle, I'm like, yep, this is his salvation.
Right.
And I was as morally certain as Hugh Jackman was that Paul Dano knew where the kids were.
Right.
I was that certain about that red whistle.
But don't you think, because, like, I think if, so without, I think you still would have been certain, because here's why. I almost wonder if the whistle wasn't a later addition that Villeneuve put in there because he was a little afraid that people would connect the dots, because there's a lot of playing with the idea of you've got to be quiet because the police are here several times in the movie. And if that whistle had not been introduced, I think you would just assume that Hugh Jackman would, maybe weakly, maybe not, he would be able to yell and get, if he was alive, he'd be able to get the attention of someone to hear him without the whistle. And for whatever reason, the whistle was added because, I don't know. I don't know. Because also, like, the other thing is, like, this movie is a little bit more spiritual than a thriller, and, like, that vision of his daughter giving him the whistle, like, I feel like some of that is a little bit, you can see in his works of, like, in The Arrival, where he likes to play with things that, if they're not, like, prophetic or, like, divinely revealed, there is, like, the feel of that. Because obviously, you know, that was just a dream he had, right? You know, but it also kind of came true. because his daughter did metaphysically give him the whistle by dropping it in the pit in the first place. I don't know. Okay. I mostly agree with you. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I feel you. I'm talking about specifically from a thriller aspect.
Yeah.
It would have been more of a reveal had they not shown it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, I kind of like the end of this movie. Let me ask you what the snakes have to do with anything.
I don't fucking know.
So he walks into a room full of cases when he finds this pointy nose guy, the maze guy, and there are just snakes in all of the cases except for one where he finds the notebook. And the snakes are mentioned a couple of other times, I think, in the movie, but I don't understand.
There's a key. If I was going to watch this again, I would want to watch especially the first interview that Jake Gyllenhaal had with the old lady at her house, because she mentioned something about someone being spooked by snakes and her husband. But I wasn't sure. And I guess my thought was that snakes are kind of intertwined with satanic imagery.
Right.
And like the idea that the serpent offered Adam and Eve like ultimate truth and like, you know, like the truth beyond the world they knew, which is kind of like feels like up the maze couple's alley that, you know, maybe they're, I don't know, fucking that, but that's just me kind of grasping at it. And the other thing is like, yeah, well, if I listen to whatever she's told to Jake Gyllenhaal, it's all a bunch of bullshit.
Sure.
Because she's just spinning stories I mean, that's also interesting kind of symmetry, the fact that, like, this is a very practiced deceiver that has an answer for everything when Jake Gyllenhaal shows up versus, like, Hugh Jackman's hastily made-up rationalizations for why he does things.
Yeah.
Like, a good person trying to deceive versus a practiced, like, evil person trying to deceive. Like, there's a little bit of symmetry there.
Okay.
But... yeah, fuck if I know.
And that dude, so as far as I understand it, that dude's role in the whole thing was to get clothes, both like just buying generic child's clothing, covering it in blood, and also stealing clothing from the houses of the victims in order to cover it with blood, in order to get the investigations closed.
But the fact that he, like, I don't understand why he would mix. If he's ritualistically... you know, copying the things that were done to him and he saw done, I don't understand why he's getting the, like, it seems like it should all either be store-bought clothes that he covers in pig blood, or it should all be token things that he steals from his quote-unquote parents that are doing these murders. It's weird that he would mix the two.
Yeah.
It'd be like, what if in that pit there was one dummy with a smashed-in face and one actual body?
Right.
Like, what the fuck, you know? Like, it's a weird...
Yeah, it was very confusing to me, but I suppose again, it's a strange psychology.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing with the serial killer stuff is you're tempted to be like, aha, that's what a serial killer does. But, like, you know, I'm not a great student of it, but it seems like from things that, like, my wife has tried to tell me, and, like, every fucking woman I've ever known loves true crime shit. And I'm not generalizing because I'm sure there's a lot of women out there that says that. I'm just saying my primary conduit for knowledge of serial killers is the stuff that they told me. And it seems like the more you learn, the more there's like, they're really not very commonalities between them.
I guess I'll have to watch Mindhunter.
Like,
you can't
really compare Ted Bundy to like an Ed Gein to like who's the guy who chopped up his boyfriends and kept them? Jeffrey Dahmer with the Charles Manson, like. You know, they're all over the place because, you know, human madness manifests in a lot of different ways. So,
right. Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, is attracted to scripts like this. You know, he's done Nightcrawler. He's done Zodiac. I think he likes this kind of interesting delve into the psychology of outsiders, I suppose.
I kind of think that, like, he probably just likes challenging material.
Okay, that
you
too.
You know, like he likes things that allow him to stretch the limits of what he's been able to do. Like, he likes to play the gay cowboy. He likes to play the crazy time-traveling teenager. He likes to play the tortured cop and the fabulous villain that's made. Like, to me, like, I don't, maybe that's... Is he attracted to this type of material? Is he attracted to stuff that's this weird and unconventional, lets him stretch his acting legs?
I don't know. I mean, I can name three... serial killer-esque movies that he's been in. I can't name three of any other genre.
Mm-hmm.
So
was Maria Bello, is she also in History of Violence?
I don't remember.
Because I'm like, is she attracted to playing the wife of men with volcanic histories right. and attractions of violence? Or is like, I feel like she was, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
She might be. I can't remember either.
But
I feel like that's all I have to say about this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting, like I said, it's something that I coldly admire more than I enjoyed. I'm certainly not sorry I saw it. It just kind of bummed me out. kind of a downer movie to start one's day with.
Sure.
But anyway, thank you for your support, Hatorian. Thanks for your troubles the last 3 years running the Final Fantasy Football League. You got to watch those chocobos, man. They can just really, really rack up the points on you.
So the football players are riding chocobos now?
They are. That's the fantasy part.
Damn,
of it.
Damn, I need to start watching football.
Yeah, we got our Blood Bowl in the NFL. But yeah, thanks for organizing the league. Thanks for putting all this together. We will be back to our regularly scheduled list of commission podcasts starting now. Essentially,
mm-hmm.
We got a pretty good list coming up. We've got a foreign film that I have no idea what to expect. I can't even pronounce it. It's De Battre Mon Corsaire. Like I used to call Denis Villeneuve. But then we got Looper, Heat, Exorcist, Highlander. We got some fun stuff coming up that I'm super, super excited about. Not that I'm not excited about the foreign film. It's just like I
need to be in a mood to watch those.
Yeah.
For sure. And I was pleasantly surprised by the last one that I watched. So.
Yeah, Un the Prophet.
Yeah.
That was fucking rad.
Hopefully this one will be just as good.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you got big surprise factor and the Baldies. Mm-hmm. Like, a huge surprise upside.
It's true.
So we'll be getting to that next, and we got a bunch more coming down the slate. We got all of our fantasy football stuff out of the way. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Again, our commission queues are closed. We have 19 films in the pike. We are nowhere near reopening or discussing what we're going to do with the commission slots. I get a lot, you know, every time a commission podcast gets out, I get this question, but we are not accepting anything in the queue for commission podcasts at this time.
Mm-hmm.
We will see you for the next one. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.